got to stop it, brother. Let's get together and unify. Trouble.
Radio Basics.
And there's always a message involved. What's good, Toronto? We're back for another week, Radio Basics. We on CHOY 105.5. We are the People's Radio, and we couldn't do what we do without the help and the support of CHRY, Toronto's one of Toronto's best community radio stations and North Toronto's only community radio station. Oh, well, that's not true. That's not true. We got Voces Latinas representing the voices of the Latino community out at Dufferin and St. Clair. Or Dufferin and Lawrence, I should say. Not the only community radio station, but one of the strongest ones, most definitely, here on 105.5. We're Radio Basics. We are the radio wing of Basics Free Community Newsletter. And you can check us out online at basicsnewsletter.blogspot.com. We got a big show tonight. The topic of the show tonight is the right of all peoples to self-determination and liberation, right? And we're going to be looking at how those movements that are struggling for self-determination and liberation in the world today are being criminalized, labeled as terrorists, right? And the solidarity activists who support them and try to bring light to these democratic struggles are also maligned, and in some cases, particularly with the guests that we have on the show tonight with us from Denmark, that sometimes those individuals too get slapped with terrorism charges. The first part of the show, we're going to have some local and international news. And we got a few special interviews later on in the show. Once again, our special guest will be Patrick McManus from the organization Rebellion out of Denmark. And he'll be talking about his court case coming up. He has been slapped with terrorist charges under EU legislation for his organization supporting democratic secular liberation movements in Palestine and Colombia. That's at the middle of our show. At the end of the show, we'll be talking with Pablo Vivanco from the May 1st Movement Coalition from here in Toronto, a coalition of working class organizations from representing many different communities and ethnic backgrounds. And we're going to be talking about the connection between workers' struggles here in Toronto and liberation struggles abroad. But to begin with local news, No Cops says that the newly released SRO report gets a failing grade. Last week, the New Neighborhood Organized Coalition Opposed to Police in Schools, or No Cops, put out a public statement questioning the self-review put out by the Toronto Police Services of their occupation of Toronto schools. As one of the coalition's members and Toronto high school teacher James Campbell said in the report, quote, if this report had been written by a student, it would definitely not pass as it draws conclusions that are contrary to its own data, unquote. To quote from the report itself, quote, overall student perception of the safety in their school and their neighborhood surrounding the school did not improve. What's worse is that the report confirms that many students feel less safe with school resource officers in the schools, as those students, quote, who thought the program was a bad idea were more likely to say that it did not feel safe. No Cops community member Alok Premji emphasized that, quote, the survey methodology for evaluation is seriously suspect and would not come close to meeting the basic requirements of any government-funded analysis, let alone be considered adequate justification for a program that costs over $5 million per year to run. Among other things, there was no opportunity for students to respond if they had been negatively impacted by the SRO. The troubling arrest of a Toronto student at Northern Secondary School is only one highly publicized event among numerous incidences we have documented where students have felt violated or targeted by the SRO at their school, unquote. That was Alok Premji from the No Cops organization. And also No Cops member and parent Niraj Joshi said, it is particularly troubling that the Toronto Police Services is using the study to recommend additional investment of precious funds and institutional resources in this failed program. We should not be wasting taxpayer money on the universally unproven and yet costly experiment of the SRO program. Instead, the Toronto District School Board and the province must allocate these provincial funds towards immediately implementing the recommendations put forward from two independent community consultations, the Falconer Report on School Safety and the Curling McCurtry Report on the Roots of Youth Violence, for both engaging youth and making our schools safer. For the full public statement, our listeners can visit the Basics website. The No Cops organization public statement is posted there. And once again, that's basicsnewsletter.blogspot.com. To international news, the U.S. President Barack Obama, who the masses of the world once believed to be the peace president, and who was the recipient, in fact, of the recent Nobel Peace Prize, has decided to increase the troop presence in Afghanistan by 30,000 soldiers, increasing the U.S. troop presence to over 100,000 and the total occupation forces in that country to 140,000, which is the largest foreign occupation in Afghanistan's history. Approximately 2,000 Afghan civilians have been killed this year alone, and it's been the bloodiest year for the foreign occupiers as well. This year's fraudulent elections, coupled with NATO and the Karzai government overtures to elements of the Taliban for support, continue to prove that no good can come of the occupation for the Afghan people. In a recent visit to Toronto, the former female Afghan MP, Malalai Joya, who was expelled from Parliament for questioning the legitimacy of a governing body filled with warlords and felons, made her message to Canadians clear on her visit to Toronto. Canada out of Afghanistan. Canada has promised that it will be terminating its occupation in 2011, but Canada has been making such promises since the very beginning of its occupation, when it said that it would be out by 2004, then 2007, then 2009, and now 2011. Over 25,000 Canadian soldiers have participated in the occupation of Afghanistan. The case of Afghanistan today poses the question to all people who yearn for and uphold the right to liberation and self-emancipation. That question is this: what means to liberation must a people take in the face of tyranny, illegitimate government, foreign occupation, and state terrorism? This is the question at the center of our feature interviews today. In particular, we'll be exploring the question of armed liberation struggles, the solidarity movements that support them, and how governments like the United States, Canada, and the European Union are using anti-terrorist legislation to repress the right to struggle for liberation from tyranny and foreign occupation. We will be playing an interview conducted yesterday with Patrick McManus, as I said earlier, who's a solidarity activist from the Danish organization Rebellion. McManus is facing terrorist charges for his organization's role in openly supporting the secular democratic liberation movements in Palestine and Colombia. And again, later in the show, we'll be catching up with Pablo Vivanco from the May 1st movement from here in Toronto. But before we go to the commercial break, let's go to a song. This song is by Ali Primera, who was a Venezuelan folk singer who captured the hearts and the imaginations of not only the Venezuelan, but Latin American people all across the hemisphere in the 1970s, 1980s. The song is called Sombrero Azul, or Blue Sombrero. And the version I'm going to be playing for you was recorded and played live in Nicaragua, I believe, at a time when the revolutions in Nicaragua and El Salvador were maturing and were at their heights. The song, as you'll be able to tell, it's a live version, was played to, I don't know, maybe hundreds of thousands, if not at the very least, tens and tens of thousands of people, a sea of people. You can YouTube it, Ali Primera, Sombrero Azul, and I'll do a little translation for the song as well, because it's a shame for those who do not understand Spanish. You shouldn't miss out on the beautiful revolutionary poetry of Ali Primera. And this song, I'm sending the song out to the people of Honduras, who yesterday staged a massive boycott against the illegitimate junta government, the military government that overthrew the democratically elected Manuel Zelaya back in June 2009. The people of Honduras have been peacefully resisting the military government that has received anywhere from active support to lukewarm criticism or lukewarm support or very, very moderate criticisms from governments, particularly the imperialist governments from around the world. In effect, the Micheletti government was not heavily pressured and, in fact, received some support from governments like Canada in their role in repressing the masses and repressing the democratic and revolutionary movements in that country. And so this song is going out to the people of Honduras, to the people of Central America, the people of Nicaragua and El Salvador, to which this song was addressed back in the 1980s, and also to the people of Venezuela for providing the world with an incredible revolutionary folk singer and hero like Ali Primera. Again, this is Sombrero Azul. The Salvadorian people has the hat, has a sky for a hat. So high is its dignity as it searches for the time when the earth will flower for those who have fallen, when happiness will come to replace the suffering. Come now, the march is slow, but it's still a march. Come now, by pushing the sun, the dawn gets closer. Come now, your fight is pure, like a girl. When she gives herself in love, with a free soul. Come on, Salvadorians. There's not a single bird which, after taking flight, stops in midair.
Que no hay pájaro pequeño. Ustedes dicen dale, pero fuerte.
Dale, salvadoreño, que no hay pájaro pequeño que después de alzar el vuelo se detiene en su volar. Al verde que yo le canto es el color.
I sing to the green of your cornfields.
Al verde de las boinas de matanzas tropicales.
Not to the green of the berets of tropical massacres.
Las que fueron a Vietnam a quemar los arrozales.
The ones which went to Vietnam
y hoy andan
to burn
por
the rice
tierras,
fields.
Como andar por sus
I cry for those lands as I walk across them.
Salvadoreño, que no hay pájaro pequeño. Que después de alzar el vuelo se detiene en su volar. Dale, salvadoreño, que no hay pájaro pequeño. Que después de alzar el vuelo se detiene en su volar.
¡Duro las palmas ahora! ¡Tambora central!
Que no hay pájaro pequeño que después de alzar el vuelo se detenga en su volar. Hermano salvadoreño, viva tu sombrero azul.
Brother Salvadorian, long live your blue hat.
Dale que tu limpia sangre germinará sobre el mar.
Come on, let your clean blood spread across the sea.
Y será una enorme rosa de amor por la humanidad.
An enormous rose of love for humanity.
Hermano salvadoreño, viva tu sombrero azul.
Long live your blue hat.
Tendrán que llenar el mundo con masacres del Sumpul.
Would have to be full of massacres of Sumpul. To stop your desire for love.
Dale, salvadoreño, que no hay pájaro pequeño que después de alzar el vuelo se detenga en su volar. Dale, salvadoreño, que no hay pájaro pequeño que después de alzar el vuelo se detenga en su volar.
CHOR 105.5. This is Steve DeSilva reporting for Radio Basics, Radio for the People. The topic of our discussion today is the right of all nations to self-determination. And we will be exploring how imperialist governments like Canada, the United States, and the European Union have passed laws, especially since 2001, criminalizing liberation struggles and freedom struggles around the world in places like Colombia, Palestine, Philippines, and the struggle of the Tamil people in Sri Lanka. In the global war on terror, no distinction is made between terrorist organizations that were once or still are on the payroll of America's CIA versus, on the other hand, genuine liberation movements backed by hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people around the world. From the perspective of imperialism, any resistance to economic expansion and domination to countries like the U.S. and Canada is considered terrorism. We are living in a world where occupation by foreign armies is called democracy, and the struggle for freedom and liberation is called terrorism. To speak on these issues, it's my pleasure to welcome two special guests to our program tonight. The first in our studio with us today is Sujana Thiru, who is a member of an organization, Canadian Humanitarian Appeal for the Relief of Tamils. Suj, thank you for being with us tonight, brother.
Thank you, brother.
Canadian Heart is a human rights organization that's been drawing attention to the genocidal violence conducted against Tamil civilians by the Sri Lankan government over the last year. Canadian Heart is also part of the May 1st movement, which we'll be talking about later in the show. Suj and I will be interviewing our second guest for today, Patrick McManus, a member of the Danish organization Rebellion, an organization that proclaims not only the right of peoples to resist illegitimate government and foreign occupation, but the right to take up armed struggle against oppression where all other means have been exhausted. For their work, the member, Patrick McManus, a spokesperson for Rebellion, is now facing terrorist charges under EU anti-terrorist legislation. Greetings, Patrick, and thank you for being on the line with us today.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Hi, Patrick. We're aware of like who you are and what you do, but can you introduce yourself and your organization, Rebellion, for our listeners? Why was it formed, and what are the political objectives?
Yeah, I can, but I'd like to say, first, that I'm very glad to hear that there's a Tamil representative participating too, because that's something I've been trying to work on, because I think there's been a terrible tragedy in Sri Lanka that has really victimized Tamil people, and I, you know, worked with the immigrants here in Denmark a lot on that, you know. So, all right, I think it's a tremendous example of the way terrorist legislation has legitimized state power, and this is just what we have seen in Sri Lanka. All right, but our small organization is called Rebellion, or OPRA in Danish. And it was formed in 2004 as a challenge to terrorist legislation, both in Denmark and internationally. And of course, this came after the 9/11 episode, which in a way accelerated something which was already underway, but which meant actually that, you know, liberation movements of the world had been defined as terrorist organizations, but now this legislation has become extremely effective in a way, because it is preventing a long tradition of international solidarity that is so important for us. If you look back, actually, you know, my own origin is in the anti-apartheid movement in the 70s and 80s here in Denmark. Mm-hmm. ANC was defined as a terrorist organization in Washington and in London. But at the same time, we were able to collect funds, etc., for the ANC without being prosecuted. That has now changed.
Pardon me, Patrick, what organization was that from the 70s and 80s?
In Danish, it's called Landskomiteen South Africa Action. It's the Danish anti-apartheid movement. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was actually chairperson of it in the 80s. Yeah? Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, for the significance of the Danish people themselves. What is the significance of the right of peoples to struggle against oppression and foreign occupation?
Yeah, well, their actual attitude today to us of what, but I'd like to say that one of the themes we really have tried to raise too is that during the occupation of Denmark by the Nazi government in the 40s, you know, all members of the resistance movement were actually publicly defined as terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
And this is part of the theme we are trying to raise, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we find it very important, you know. And we have actually an allied organization of descendants, the very few of them left of the actual members of the resistance movement in Denmark. But there is an organization which, you know, continues their issue. And they have actually also transferred funds to PFLP and to FARC as a challenge to the whole concept which we are meeting at present in terrorist legislation.
Mm-hmm. I think for the sake of our listeners, it's important to provide a context from a Canadian perspective and Canada's role. You know, Canada included in its designated list of designated terrorist organizations is the Islamic Resistance Movement of Palestine, Hamas, Hezbollah of Lebanon, the Liberation Tigers of Tamil Eelam, the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia and the National Liberation Army, the two largest liberation organizations in Colombia, the PKK, the Kurdistan Workers Party, the Communist Party of Peru, Shining Path, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine.
You
know, all these groups have been labeled terrorist officially by the Canadian government, but more importantly as well, Canada has also made intimations that, you know, other organizations in Canada may eventually fall under that scope. For example, the Mohawk Warriors Society, which was designated in Canada's 2007 counterinsurgency manual as one organization that they were going to be targeting. And also, we should remember that in the 1970s, in October 1970, the Canadian government declared martial law, implemented the War Measures Act against the Quebec Liberation Front, which was a national liberation struggle in the 1970s.
The FLQ.
So just to provide our audience with some perspective.
I know. Well, we've actually, what we're accused of, and, you know, I'm the one going to court for some reason, Dave, we were actually 100 members who signed this petition and where we declared a transfer of substantial funds to FARC and PFLP.
Mm-hmm.
We actually only chose FARC and PFLP as examples. That was quite expressive because there are so many other situations. We have many who work, and especially to myself, with the Philippines, with Kurdistan, et cetera, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It is a huge issue. I mean, we're not just focusing on two organizations. We are saying that this is an international problem.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick, for the people, at least, yeah?
Patrick, can you summarize as the current status of your case? How has EU anti-terrorist legislation has been applied? How has EU anti-terrorist legislation has been applied to your organization and the organization close to you, Lovers and Fighters?
Yeah, well, we're deeply related with Fighters and Lovers, as they're called, you know, who lost the case at the Supreme Court here in Denmark this year.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, they now have our own court case is coming. It's starting now on Thursday, and again twice in here in December, and then twice in January, and then with the results being published in February from court, you know, but. Yes, Fighters and Lovers lost the case, and they were pursuing the strategy, the arguments, which we also, you know, were supporting them in, etc., you know?
Mm.
But what actually happened, in a way, is that the courts focused on the actions of the organizations themselves and refused to see any type of proportion between the activities of the PFLP or FARC related to state terrorism. Mm-hmm. That's actually central in the issue. Huh?
Yeah.
And I think we're going to raise, of course, the same issue in many ways, but I think we're also going to, now we're still discussing strategy, etc., but I think we're also going to raise the whole issue of the Geneva Convention, which does give civilians also the right to participate in conflicts under situations of occupation, etc., etc., you know?
Yeah.
So we're preparing the court case at the moment, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I noticed that your organization, Rebellion, put out a statement today called The Nine Theses. And throughout the statement, it seems like there's what the statement is showing is the legitimacy of struggle against foreign occupation and oppression and illegitimate governments. I mean, whether you want to talk about your case in particular or not, how does what's the significance of this document?
What's the
significance of the nine theses that you've put out?
Well, it's only simply a simple attempt to these nine theses to explain what it is about for us, you know, because what we're really trying to do is to defend a history, a long, long, long history where people have struggled for what we could now today call human rights, you know. This has been going on really for centuries, from the time of the slaves, the peasants, etc., etc. Throughout history, this has been the struggle, you know. Mm-hmm. And we would actually like, for example, to ask the United States to be loyal towards its own declaration of independence, for example, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a declaration of unalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, you know, and also states that the right to resistance is there too against every regime that violates these rights.
Mm-hmm.
That is a basic document, you know, which in many ways, I'm not sure how many citizens of the United States are aware of, but that is simply a fundamental document, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And this is part of a history, a struggle which has been going on and on. We had then the Universal Declaration of Human Rights after World War II, which also says that a people who is compelled, as they say, to have recourse as a last resort to rebellion against tyranny and oppression, they have that right, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And this is simply something which the terrorist legislation is trying to undermine.
Yes. That's something a lot of people don't realize, is that according to the Geneva Convention itself, that the armed organizations that have, you know, popular support, have geographical bases, are legitimate belligerents. They have to operate according to international law, and they are not terrorists. These are legitimate liberation forces that have the support of wide masses of people. And what we saw with the case, I guess, Suj of, in relation to the Tamil struggle in Sri Lanka, is that they were by putting them outside the boundaries of the law, declaring them terrorists, it then becomes a pretext to just slaughter, massacre, and eliminate people.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, that is exactly what has happened. And, I mean, it has also been the attempt in Colombia. You know, this is what they're doing. States this so-called terrorist legislation has created enormous, in a way, legitimacy for the offensive of states against these movements, You know, I mean, the Sri Lanka is a good example, or a terrible example, and Colombia too, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, if you're mentioning the Geneva Convention, but, you know, in after the anti-colonialism wars of the 60s and 70s, you know, mm-hmm. they did revise the convention and legalize armed conflicts.
Patrick, you also been wondering, like, what is the response from the media on the one hand, and what level of popular support has your campaign garnered in Denmark as well as internationally?
Well, I think the media, it's difficult with the media, but we're getting through in some areas, but not yet. I think they're going to be first really attentive to us when the court case actually comes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But we have fortunately, there are some newspapers, etc., that do try to follow us, and on the other hand, I think the actual popular support is growing and growing. Also, even especially, I'd say, even in the trade unions, because they also feel themselves threatened. The legislation was, you know, after the New York, etc., it was just in 2002, it was, legislation was introduced here, but it's been revised a number of times, and the trade unions are becoming an increasingly threatened part of this whole issue, you know. I think they're becoming increasingly aware of that, you know. Only the day before yesterday, there was a new revision of the law in Denmark, and that especially threatens the trade unions, you know.
I guess they're using, they are using the laws to, put down every single organization that questions them, and which
exactly.
is
that is the problem. I mean, I think we should remember. I think we're trying to get this through to that. I mean, the whole issue is not the so-called third world. It's not a distant conflict in the Philippines or in Palestine or in Sri Lanka, etc. It is becoming, the whole problem is becoming a problem which we will have in Europe. I mean, I think too that, I mean, now the whole of the international conference on climate, etc., is taking place in Copenhagen, and I think there are going to be some issues there, activities there, which are also going to be, in a way, involved in this whole issue, too. And I think in Europe, as such, you know, I mean, the issues are becoming more and more extreme, because there are many here in Europe who had the vision of a European fortress, or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
Neo-fascism is growing here in Europe, and this is simply the perspective, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, and our small, you know, organization is only part of this. You know, we're trying to, you know, focus on a certain area, but it is a huge issue.
You have 1 minute remaining.
Well, with that, Patrick, I suppose we're going to have to leave it there.
All right.
Thank you so much for being on the line with us today. And when we air the program and we put it on the internet, we'll send it along to yourself, to Rebellion. Good luck with the case, and we'll definitely be following, and we'll also be publicizing the developments around your case.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Radio Basic, CHRY 105.5. I'm Steve, and we're back. That was Patrick McManus of the organization Rebellion of Denmark, speaking on his upcoming case and the terrorist charges that have been applied against him. And he was talking to us yesterday. We interviewed him on the discussion of the right of all peoples and nations to self-determination and liberation by any and all means necessary, and how oppressive governments are using the banner of the war on terror to repress those movements. Throughout that interview, we referenced a document that was put out by the organization yesterday called The Nine Theses, The Right to Rebellion. Very interesting. People should check it out. It's been posted to the Basics website at basicsnewsletter.blogspot.com. And I mean, it's interesting how it points to these decisive moments in the construction of international law, how this right of peoples to resist foreign occupation, to resist illegitimate governments, to resist tyranny, this right to resistance and rebellion and even armed struggle, up to the point of armed struggle, is an inalienable right of people. And that is the language of the American Declaration of Independence itself. This was also the similar type of language from the Geneva Convention, a supplemental protocol from 1977 that says, and I quote, armed conflicts when people are, quote, fighting against colonial domination and alien occupation and against racist regimes in the exercise of their right to self-determination, that armed conflicts are legitimate. So we have to question the role of our own government even in slapping these charges, terrorist charges, on organizations that are waging genuine liberation struggles. And that goes for the Tamil people today, of which that's an issue that's been in the spotlight in the Canadian media over the period of the last year. Let us go to a popular national liberation song, an anti-fascist song, a revolutionary song. This is Bella Ciao, and this song was born in Europe during the anti-fascist struggles of the 1940s. It's an Italian song, but since the 1940s, it's been sung by people all across the world, including, in fact, in Iran in 2009, in their struggle to overthrow the Islamic dictatorship. This is Bella Ciao, Radio Basics. We're going to go to commercial. We're going to be coming back with May 1st Movement, Pablo Vivanco. We're going to be talking about the relationship between liberation struggles and Toronto workers. CHRY 105.5, reporting for Radio Basics. We'll be back. Radio Basics, we're back. What we have coming up next is an interview with Pablo Vivanco from the May 1st Movement. And we're going to be talking about, we interviewed Pablo yesterday, myself and Sujanat from Canadian Heart, Canadian Humanitarian Appeal for the Relief of Tamils. We interviewed Pablo Vivanco on the question of the relationship between the struggle of working class people here in Toronto and national liberation struggles abroad. This interview will take us to the end of the show, so I wish you all a good night. And give me a call here in the studio if you want to check out Radio Basics, Basics Free Community Newsletter. Our number here is 416-736-5656, 416-736-5656. If you like what you hear, you want to get involved, you want to get basics in your community, in your community center, in your workplace, give me a shout. Or you can also drop us an email at basics.canada@gmail.com. And the number here, again, is 416-736-5656. This is Basics interviewing the May 1st Movement. Radio Basics, we're out for the night. We'll see you next week. Here with Sujanath from Canadian Heart, and the topic of our discussion today has been the right of nations to self-determination and liberation, and the role of governments like Canada and other governments, as we've been discussing in Europe, in passing legislation that criminalizes those movements and the solidarity movements that support liberation movements. On the line with us tonight is Pablo Vivanco from the May 1st Movement, which is a coalition of working class people's organizations here in Toronto trying to reconstitute the tradition of May Day. Pablo, thank you for being with us.
No problem.
So, Pablo, what we've been discussing tonight with Patrick McManus from Denmark, from the organization Rebellion, is the way governments are passing, have passed legislation to criminalize liberation movements around the world and solidarity movements that support them. And please tell us about the May 1st movement. What are the objectives and goals of your organization? And then also how that ties into, you know, how, what's the relationship between worker struggles and liberation struggles abroad?
Okay, well, the May 1st movement is a coalition of a number of different, mostly community, migrant community organizations that came together last year in order to try to revitalize, you could say, the culture and spirit around May Day. Obviously, this country, Canada, and the U.S. are pretty much the only two countries where May Day, International Workers' Day, is something that isn't commemorated. May Day is actually a national holiday in over 80 countries. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the particular history of here in North America, where shortly after the Haymarket riots, which were the birthplace of May Day in Chicago, with hundreds of thousands of mostly migrant workers at that time from Eastern Europe, Ireland, striking for an 8-hour workday and being met with state repression. That's where May Day started, but regrettably over here, the ruling classes had the foresight to separate the working classes from over here with working people internationally, and so they created Labor Day. Which I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with in terms of the parades and whatnot, but I'm sure they also realize that it has a lot less of a you know, class militant focus, and certainly, I guess, and partially because of the fact that it's separated from the rest of the world, that it becomes an isolated thing for this country. It doesn't necessarily have a significant component of internationalism, where there's a recognition of the fact that working people over here have the same interest to and have the same interest as and whose futures are bound up in the same future as you know, working people internationally. So it's a fairly young coalition, but we've been working since the last year on not only on May Day, but you know, trying to bring our groups together. You know, for other events as well, we had a contingent on Labor Day as well, as well as we've been trying to work on putting together these things which we're calling May Day schools, where precisely we're trying to deal with the issues of local working class struggles with those internationally.
Mm-hmm. Just to give our audience a sense of who's part of the May 1st Movement Coalition, which member groups are part of it right now?
The Canadian Heart is part of it. I represent Barrio Nuevo, Casa Salvador Allende, which is the Chilean Canadian Cultural Association, Victor Jara Cultural Group, the Tamil Youth Organization, Migrante Ontario, Bayan Ontario, the Progressive. I always get like how this one is a little wrong. Progressive Nepali's Forum of the Americas, mm-hmm. UFCW 1000A, and I'm probably forgetting an organization. FMLN Toronto.
And Basics. Don't forget Basics.
Yes, of course. thanks for correcting me on that. We're integrating more organizations
You know, during the recent large-scale mobilizations of the Tamil community in response to the genocidal violence that was being conducted against the people of Tamil Eelam on the island of Sri Lanka, in the state of Sri Lanka, the response from the Canadian media here to the mobilizations of the Tamil community was that if you're interested in your national liberation struggle, you should go back home, right? But what we see from the composition of the May 1st movement is that these international issues are of extreme importance, not only what's clearly of importance to all those workers who have migrated within one or two or even three generations to Canada, but explain to us what is the link between these liberation struggles and the Canadian working class as a whole?
Aside from the fact that that it is more than just like a cliche or a slogan to say that one people's freedom is bound up in others, particularly when they belong to the same class and suffer from the same roots of that sort of oppression. Mm-hmm. I think particularly in this day and age, and with the internationalization of capitalism, the financialization that's been the hallmark of capitalism over the last 20 years or so, I think everyone is quite aware of how mobile capital is, and how one company, the fact that it may be based in the U.S. or Canada, it has affairs and investments and other things in other parts of the world. At the same time, we see how those same companies use pit workers against each other. As an example, one of an event that we have coming up in January is going to be dealing with the issues of worker struggles in this economic crisis. And importantly, we have people from Migrante bringing some temporary foreign workers who are going to be speaking about their issues. And obviously, those are workers that come over here under these agreements that exist between Canada and other countries in the global south, workers coming over here to have their labor exploited over here. But we also have some people coming from the auto plant out in Oakville, where Ford was telling them that they had to cut certain wages and make all these concessions, otherwise that job contract would go over to Mexico. So this is kind of like the international dimension of things now. Mm-hmm. And we also have to, beyond that aspect of the internationalization of capital and the mm-hmm. international division of labor, we also got to recognize the fact that that Canada is an imperialist country. So therefore, its military affairs and its political affairs is also going to be involved in supporting oppressive governments like that in the Philippines or in Sri Lanka or in mm-hmm. Israel to suppress the resistance movements in those countries. And so that people over here have a responsibility, right, to stand up in the face of that when their tax dollars at the time when are the social programs that have been implemented over here, the social safety net that workers fought so hard for and so long for to achieve, when those things are being eroded at the same time as financial and other resources are going to perpetuate the oppression of our brothers and sisters elsewhere through our government.
Now, so that's one way to look at it, right? The tax dollars that are being spent in propping up these oppressive, you know, genocidal governments in some cases. That's one economistic argument that could be made. But let's look at a more political dimension. What does the freedom and the liberation struggles of movements like in Palestine, in Sri Lanka, in Colombia, Venezuela, Nepal, all these countries, what would that actually, how would that benefit Canadian workers in their own struggles? What's the link there?
Well, the link there, is, as I said earlier, is the fact that any advancement by working people anywhere will be an advancement by working people everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. Like, as it may cause some cringing among people who would like to ignore this fact. The all the gains that were made throughout the Russian Revolution, in spite of, like, you know, I don't want to make any comments on the Soviet Union as a whole, but it's very difficult to conceive that that work people over here would have made those same advancements in that same amount of time if it hadn't been for that precedent being set there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So at this time, right, like, for example, in like Venezuela, where they're going completely counter to the things that are that the government's doing over here, and actually investing in people, investing in social programs, expanding out the amount of services that are available to people as not only a way to deal with, like, this economic global crisis, but as something that is actually a right to all of its citizens, is something that inevitably puts pressure on governments everywhere surrounding it to do the same. If people realize that that's actually a possibility, in another place, then it's going to give them, and hopefully will give them, some inspiration to push their own governments to do the same.
I mean, we've already seen the benefits of the Venezuelan Revolution spilling over not only into Latin America, but even America, where working class Americans have been provided with subsidized oil, heating oil for their houses. And, you know, we should also acknowledge that the United States and the Canadian government are arming and supporting the Colombian government in its military expansion and the expansion of those governments in Colombia to eventually, it seems like, combat a country like Venezuela, precisely for the reasons that you're talking about.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And obviously we don't have enough time over here to discuss all the issues and to expand on all the things all the reasons why those issues are actually issues for local workers. But another thing which I think is also important to mention is, particularly in a place like Toronto, most people are here, in spite of the fact that, like, I mean, obviously people come over here and they make a life, they build their families, and so they end up adopting this as their home. Nonetheless, like, I mean, it has to be somewhat recognized, and you can probably say this for the pretty much all the waves of immigration that have come in here, even the waves from Europe that came in at the turn of the century, that people came to this country in a lot of cases fleeing the local manifestations of imperialism, right?
Yeah.
And so that's another reason why why people over here have to address that, and why that actually is a local issue.
Absolutely. I mean, going right back to the Scottish, the Irish, the Ukrainians, the Finns, you know, the Chinese, the Japanese, a lot of these South Asians at the turn of the century, all these groupings were poor, mostly landless peasants who had been kicked off their land, and also poor working class urban peoples who came to Canada believing that they were coming to a promised land, that they would be afforded better opportunities, which they discovered wasn't quite the case. But Pablo, we're running out of time, brother, but we want to let our listeners know what May 1st Movement is all about. So tell us what's on the horizon and how can people get involved.
Well, like I said, we're going to be launching, we're going to have an event coming up in January. We're just confirming the location and everything, but it's going to be another May Day school where we're going to be dealing with the issue of local worker struggles and how that, actually worker struggles in the economic, under this economic crisis. So we're going to be putting a particular focus on some of the local struggles, although we're going to be dealing with some of the international dimensions of that too. Like I already mentioned that Migrante is going to have a speaker from a temporary worker mm-hmm. here, as well as some of the workers that have been laid off from AW plants out in Oakville, and a few others. And we're looking at that being around January 16th. And we're also going to be launching our website by the end of the month. And that would be, the website is may-1.org.
Great.
But it's not up yet, though.
And we'll be sure to put those links to the Basics website.
All right, cool.
All right. Pablo Vivanco, speaking on behalf of the May 1st Movement and from Barrio Nuevo, thank you very much, brother.
Thanks, man.
This is Steve DeSilva from Radio Basics, and I'm here with my brother in the studio, Suj. How are you doing tonight, Suj?
Not bad, brother.
So Suj is from Canadian Heart, and we've been talking on the issue of national liberation, the criminalization of liberation movements, and how that ties into, you know, other struggles, worker struggles. Radio Basics, CHRY 105.5 FM. Thank you very much. That was Radio Basics interviewing Pablo Vivanco from the May 1st Movement yesterday afternoon. That's all we got for today, brothers and sisters. Join us next week again when another one of our hosts, not me, at least I don't think, will be giving you another show exposing, you know, the injustices and indignities that are happening around the world, from the local to the international, but also celebrating people's struggles. So let's go out with the track. This track is needs no introduction for most people, but just in case you don't know, it's Comandante Che Guevara, and it's by Vitor Jara, another revolutionary folk singer of Latin America, of Chile, who was executed in the National Stadium in 1973 by the Pinochet dictatorship. It says, Radio Basics, we're out. We love you, Toronto. Keep in touch. Hit us up online, basicsnewsletter.blogspot.com, and we'll see you next week. We're out.
Aquí se queda la clara. transparencia de tu querida presencia, comandante Che Guevara.
Seguiremos adelante, como junto a ti seguimos. Con Fidel te decimos, hasta siempre, comandante.
Aquí se queda la clara de la entrañable transparencia de tu querida presencia, comandante Che Guevara.